The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Now it's time to think and discern. This is Bob Burney Live.
And welcome to the 4 o'clock hour of Bob Burney Live. Welcome to our listeners in Columbus, Ohio on WRFD 880 AM and 104.5 FM. And also a very special welcome to our listeners in Tampa, Florida, on WTBN Faith Talk 570 and 910 AM. My name is Bob Burney, and I have the privilege of being your host most of this week, today, and we'll finish up tomorrow. I have the privilege of visiting with you folks in Tampa and Columbus tomorrow as well. Well, these are tumultuous times. I would imagine probably most of you are not old enough to remember the racial tensions of the 60s. I certainly do. Just as a little bit of background, I live very close to the Watts riots. I could see the smoke and the fires from my house. I lived in a very integrated neighborhood. In my 3 years of high school, back then we had 3 years of high school, not four, my high school in Compton, California, went from majority white in my sophomore year to majority black in my senior year. I went from the majority to the minority in just 3 years, and our country was just ripped apart during those times. Then the wonderful work of Martin Luther King Jr. and so many others that made such progress in race relations. And now it seems like much of that has been eliminated. And many would believe that we're headed in the opposite direction right now in America. And of course, we got the whole COVID-19 thing going on. And I have said this repeatedly, over and over and over again for the last several weeks. I'm going to stand with almost anyone and any organization that truly desires racial harmony, racial unity, and I want to stand against any organization or any individual that tries to divide us. Well, I have a very special guest in the studio, and this is kind of wild because this is the first in-studio interview that I've had since all this COVID thing. We had to do all of our interviews by phone, but now we are compliant. We have plastic barriers. We got, But in the studio with me, on the other side of the plastic barrier, is a dear, dear friend, Mitchell Ellison. Mitchell Ellison has been married for 32 years to his dear wife. And what an incredible testimony. God set he and his wife free from cocaine addiction. And as a result, they started a ministry called the Crack House Ministry, which stands for Christ Resurrects After Crack Kills. Mitchell Ellison, it is such a privilege and an honor to have you in the studio today. Welcome, my brother.
It's good to be here,
Bob. Oh, it is great to have you here.
It's been a while.
It has been a while. It has been too long. Let's start out by giving us a little bit of your testimony, Mitchell.
Well,
your background and how you came to Christ.
Wow. Okay, we're going all the way back there. First of all, let me say that this This thing between us makes me feel that one of us is in jail.
Well, so, I'm going to pretend it's you.
Okay.
The bad thing is, it's plastic.
Right.
And I see as much a reflection of me as I do you, and that's really troubling. Because I'd rather see you.
It might be a good thing. Well, I got saved in Atlanta, Georgia in 1985, and have since... been attempting to serve the Lord diligently, trying to help other people who were addicted to drugs and alcohol like I was, and just actually got addicted to drugs and alcohol after I have accepted Christ.
See, I think that's the most interesting thing about your testimony. Almost every testimony I've heard of people who were addicted, you know, I got saved and I was delivered and set free. Mm-hmm. The worst of your addictions came after you accepted Christ. Mm-hmm. Just briefly explain that.
Well,
how did that happen?
You know, I think
because you were active in church.
Oh, real active, on fire for the Lord, and really went through some tough times, and went back to drinking and smoking marijuana, and eventually somebody introduced me to crack cocaine, and everything went downhill from there.
Sure.
So I kind of moved away from church when I went through some situations and just got back into the world.
Yeah.
Stopped going to church, stopped reading the Bible, stopped praying, and returned, as it were, a dog to the vomit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
You
know, from there on, it's history. You know, it's been 22 years now, and just been attempting to help other people, not just serving God, just serving people.
Yeah.
You know?
And how did Crack Ministries begin? I love the name. The Crack House Ministries, Christ Resurrects After Crack Kills. How did that come about?
Well, during the time of my addiction, I saw people who also were addicted, and I didn't think that they had a lot of places to go that were free.
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought, man, these people would have a much better chance if they had a house that they could attend that would be a safe haven, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And so my desire was to help people who originally were like me, you know, addicted to drugs and or alcohol. And so we started in my father's garage.
Mm-hmm.
And the alley was full, and it's down in the South Linden.
That would have been a great name, too, My Father's Garage Ministry.
Yeah. We're done with that, though. So we did that, and the garage got full, and God began to open up some other doors. And as I said, you know, it was just one step after another.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we ended up having three sober homes, and now we're down to two. Basically, one is a double.
What's a sober home?
A sober home is where men can come they can stay for up to 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to minister to them while they're there, help them with employment, help them with getting to know God and growing in their walk with Christ.
You have an inner city ministry.
Inner city.
What is the racial makeup of your ministry?
Somebody asked me that today, and I told them that I would have to say that it was probably 60-40.
Okay.
60 African-American, 40 Caucasians.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's a few other races thrown in there.
Yeah.
You know, the thing about that is that when you deal with addiction, race goes out of the window.
Yeah.
You know, because we're all drowning, and so therefore it doesn't matter what color you are when you're trying to save your life.
Yeah. We're talking with Mitchell Ellison. He and his wife founded Crack House Ministries here in Columbus, Ohio. Before we go any further, how could listeners learn more about Crack House Ministries? We're on in Columbus. We're on in Tampa, Florida. But how could people find out about Crack House Ministries?
Well, they can find out about us through our website, crackhouseministry.org.
All right. C-R-A-C-K, crackhouseministries.org. Crackhouseministries.org. All right. We're talking with Mitchell Ellison, and I'm coming up on a break, Mitchell. Just beginning to get into the things that I want to talk about today. So let's take a break, and we will be back with Mitchell Ellison, founder of Crack House Ministries, an inner city ministry here in Columbus, Ohio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Thank you.
talk radio that makes a difference.
Makes a difference.
This is Bob Burney Live.
Welcome again to Bob Burney Live. To those of you listening in Columbus, Ohio, and those in Tampa, Florida, I have a special guest, a dear, dear friend, Mitchell Ellison, founder of Crack House Ministries, Christ Resurrects After Crack Kills, an inner city ministry here in Columbus, Ohio. Mitchell, you have obviously a perspective on what's been going on recently that I don't have and I can't have. And you and I have not talked about this, and I didn't want to because I wanted it to be very spontaneous. When the protests began here in Columbus and they turned into out-of-control riots and the Black Lives Matter thing began to take over, what were your thoughts? How were you responding? What was on your heart as you watched all of this unfold?
Well, I guess I would have to say within myself, I said, here we go. You know, because it was a no-brainer that something had to happen eventually, one way or another, whether it was this or whether it was something else, you know, because of what the scriptures say, something, we call it in the inner city, something had to pop off. And it just happened to be this. So I kind of...
Could you see it building?
I've seen it building for years. And the only reason that I see it building the way in which I did is because I have the privilege of living in both worlds, in the suburban world and in the inner city world, in the African-American world and in the Caucasian world. So I had a bird's eye view as to, in my opinion, what was going on. You know, not from way back when, that kind of racism or that kind of slavery. I'm not talking about that. And most of the time, Bob, for me, I'm not concerned about the world. I'm concerned about the church. So my observation has been a 20-year observation, but I didn't know that I was paying attention to what was going on until this happened.
See, your perspective is so unique because you are intimately involved in the Black community here in Columbus, intimately involved in the Black community, but you have spent much of your church life in predominantly white churches.
Yes, sir.
So you really do have kind of your thumb on the heartbeat of both worlds, which I don't. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And again, you have a perspective that I don't have. So, all right, you saw it coming and something popped off, but how were you responding as you saw our city just erupt into violence and absolute chaos? Something that's not happened in Columbus, Ohio for generations. I mean, the extent of the riots and so forth.
I don't think personally that I'm doing anything too much different than what I was doing because I've already stepped out of my comfort zone years ago. So what other people think about Caucasian peoples, I don't necessarily think that about all Caucasian people. What other people think about African Americans, I don't necessarily think that about all African Americans. So for me to have some words to say to come and be some savior or anything like that, I only can share my own experience. To me, it's a great experience because I get to see it. I've gotten to live it.
All right. Give me your 60-second 60-second, Mitchell. Give me your 60-second sermon to a Black congregation concerning all that's going on around us.
A 60-second
sermon to a Black congregation concerning what's going on right now.
Well, I don't know if I could do that, Bob, because
Try. This is radio. We don't have all day.
Well, I guess if I were to do that, it would be the same thing in which God did for me. Come out of your comfort zone. You know, let's break bread together. Let's sit down and talk. You know, don't think what mama said is true. You know, don't think what we heard years ago is all true. And you won't know it until we break bread together or until we sit down and talk, until we get to know each other, until you ask me some questions. because I think a lot of us have learned things that are really not true. I know for me, I did. Growing up, I've learned a lot of untruths about people, you know, and the behavior of people. No, I mean, you know, so...
Stereotypes, generalizations
exactly.
about blacks and whites.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Now, give me your 60-second sermon to a white congregation concerning what we're going through right now. Would it be different?
Well, no, the same thing would be true. And, you know, it would be just a little bit different because the thing that I'm finding most of all is that, you know, Caucasian people, white people really don't understand that there is a difference between African Americans and Africans. They really don't understand that there's a difference between African Americans that live in the suburbs and African Americans that live in the inner city. Okay, so that whole thing is kind of weird to me, but it's true. You know, most of the Africans don't even accept African Americans. So,
okay, who are you talking? You mean like people from Somalia?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right.
So, you know, I
got you. Okay.
It's easier for a white guy that's from the suburbs to interact with a black guy that's from the suburbs rather than him to interact with the black guy that's from, I'll say, the hood or I'll say the inner city.
Yeah.
You know, those are the ones that seem to scare everybody.
Okay.
So I've seen both. You know, I've been around both. And so, you know, it's like you have to get to know them. You know, you can't believe that you know everything there is to know about them.
All right. What is it that I, as a white guy, need to understand about the black community that I probably don't understand?
I can't really say the black community. I'll say this black man here, what you need to understand is that the same way in which you love your children, I love my children. Mm-hmm. The same way in which you love and want the best for your children, I want the best for my children. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many dynamics to this thing. You know, if you got a black guy that's married to a white lady, then that whole family dynamics is different.
Uh-huh.
You know, I've been married to my African-American wife for 32 years. All of my kids are African-American, living in the world in which we're living in. So what it is, Bob, I think even you and I, we met at a basketball game. We were able to talk. We were on bleachers. We were talking. I've been on your show before. But you don't know anything really about me, but you accept me because of Christ.
That's exactly
And
right.
I accept you because of Christ. It's not just your good looks, Bob. I'm sorry. you know,
man, I'm really disappointed now. I thought it was because of my good looks.
You know, my family and I, we were in an all-white church 15 years. Well, guess what? I played football as a little lead for 2 years with an all-white team. And the black people, the black kids, called me an Uncle Tom. The white kids called me the N-word. So this started way back then when I was 13, 14 years old.
Wow.
So as I said, I've had an upfront, but now I've also been on vacation with white people.
Yeah.
For years, year after year, and had intimate conversations about race.
I would be honored to go on vacation with you, my brother.
Wear masks.
We got to take a break. We're talking with Mitchell Ellison, and I'd only planned on going to the bottom of the hour, but we've got to continue this discussion because it's so very, very important. America is at a crossroads, and Christ is the ultimate answer.